Poder Aprender, el podcast que te ayuda a aprender idiomas, hobbies y skills de manera más efectiva. Acá hablamos sobre hábitos de aprendizaje, práctica deliberada y estrategias para aprender mejor. Mi nombre es Walter Freiberg y te invito a desarrollar tu poder de aprender para alcanzar tus metas personales y profesionales. Today, I'm having a conversation with Tara Holliday. Tara is an executive coach with over 25 years of experience and a recognized specialist in imposter syndrome. She's the author of two Amazon number one bestsellers, Outsmart Imposter Syndrome and Unmasking, The Coach's Guide to Imposter Syndrome. Tara created the Inner Success Program, an 8-week one-to-one coaching journey designed specifically for executives to eliminate imposter syndrome at its root, restoring calm, clarity, and confidence. Welcome, Clara, to Poder Aprender.
I'm delighted to be here, Walter. Thank you for having me.
What is the difference between lacking confidence in a new skill, like learning a language, and truly experiencing imposter syndrome?
That's a brilliant question, Walter, because you can have imposter syndrome and be learning a new language, and you can be learning a language and not have imposter syndrome. So where would you separate them out? So when you're learning a language, imposter syndrome will show up in several ways. So imposter syndrome is the secret feeling of being a fraud, of being not quite good enough, and feeling that you'll be found out, feel like you don't belong. And it affects over 70% of people. So if you're learning a language, if you're building skills, likely you're one of the people with imposter syndrome. It's not a personality trait, it's not a flaw, anything like that. And we'll get into more of what it is in a bit. But how it'll show up is fundamentally self-doubt. And it's self-doubt in terms of, say you're learning a language and you're 3 weeks in and you're comparing yourself to other people. And you think, I'll never get there. I'm stuck. You know, they're so much better than I am. So that comparison will drag you down. Who I think I can learn another language? Who am I to do that? Yes. Or I'll never get there. So it creates a lot of self-doubt, poses a lot of self-criticism. Particularly, one of the symptoms of imposter syndrome is perfectionism. So if you're a perfectionist, then you want to do everything right first time. And so being a learner in any area at all is really uncomfortable because it doesn't feel like, you don't have the feeling like, oh, I'm just learning, so it's okay to make mistakes. It's I must be good at this right away and mistakes are bad. And so that can put this whole load of pressure onto you. And so that's really where it'll come out most in terms of your language learning and your skills learning.
It makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate that. You say that we can learn still with when we're lacking in confidence. Otherwise, it would be so hard to make progress.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really important is to believe that you'll be able to do it. So this is part of confidence, is to believe that, yes, you will be able to do it if you persevere. And also if you have the right support. You know, there's
right.
People feel alone with imposter syndrome. They feel so isolated. They feel like they're the only one who's struggling. And then they beat themselves up for struggling because, oh, I'm not good enough because I'm struggling. Nobody else seems to be struggling. Even if you go to a language class, you might look around and think, everybody else is doing so much better than me. All of those kind of comparisons, these sneaky things creep in. So any support that you can get is really, really valuable. So that support in terms of teachers, in terms of peers and colleagues who are learning at the same time as you. It's podcasts like this. Anywhere you can find it, it's going to be helpful.
So what you're saying, what you are here, you're saying is that keeping it inside, invisible, makes it easier to, and it's given its sustenance. And when we are bringing that outside, when we put it to the light, it's more challenging and it's harder to exist.
Yes, I would say that's definitely. So imposter syndrome gets triggered where you've got a combination of high challenge and low support. So the more support you give you, We don't want to take the challenge down. We don't say, oh, I won't bother learning a language, right? We don't want to take challenge down, but the more support we give, the easier it's going to be. And the more support we have, the more we stop blaming ourselves. Now, one of the things about imposter syndrome is people think that it's them, that's something wrong with them. It's personality flaw or weakness or something like that. And so they don't talk about it. You're right. People keep it a secret because they're embarrassed about it. And when you keep it a secret, that perpetuates this feeling that you're not quite good enough, that everybody else is doing so much better than you, or you should be further along. That whole, I should be this, that, and the other is really the poison of imposter syndrome.
And there's something I see in the community of language learners and other in other skills as well, is that people start thinking they are not talented when something feels challenging, when something feels hard. They started learning something and they said at a certain point, oh, maybe I'm not talented. And how can we tell when that belief is a symptom of imposter syndrome?
Yeah, well, that's actually the root cause of imposter syndrome. So if you think of imposter syndrome, this self-doubt, these behaviors like comparison and perfectionism, the stress that goes with them, that's all the symptoms of imposter syndrome. The root cause of imposter syndrome is when what we do means something about who we are. We've put together, imposter syndrome is where we've put together who we are and what we do. So if we do something good, we are good, right? If we succeed, we are good. If we do something bad, we are bad. So you can see it's a very dangerous space to be thinking about, because if you make mistakes, then you think, oh, it must be me. It must be a lack of talent. And there are a number of studies, because I enjoy learning languages, and there have been a number of, you know, studies, and there are, you know, software apps, all sorts of things like that, that have proved actually if you have a learning pattern or learning method that works for you, because not everything works for everyone. If you have one that works for you, you will succeed in it. The brain is, you know, if you can speak your own language, you can speak another one. You just need the right pathway through. So, and there are some people who are amazingly talented. And, you know, there's a guy on YouTube I've been watching recently, and he learned Chinese in a year, and he goes around the world and he learns all these languages, and then he speaks to, you know, the Cherokee in their own language, and he goes to Africa and speaks Swahili, and he's absolutely amazing, incredible, mesmerizing to watch. But if you're comparing yourself to someone like that, it's never going to be helpful, and it's never going to support you or encourage you to learn. So yes, there are amazingly talented people, but I think everyone can learn with the right tools and approach.
Yeah, and something that I've talked about in this podcast is the relationship we have with those who are ahead and with those who we see as more talented or more gifted. And this is something that I shared about early on. And the way I see it, we can take that as a threat. We can feel intimidated by them, or we can feel inspired by them. We can say, look what it's possible. Look, this guy who is learning and who dares to do that. I know who you're talking about. And I've seen like his most recent videos. He now is trying to interact and to communicate with animals. So he's learning animal languages now. He's taking it like one more step. And
fabulous.
Yeah, and that's super inspiring, like at so many levels. So I think that we can use those such examples in a way that inspire us and that empower us. It's a choice, I believe.
100%. So there is, the brain, because I do a lot of work with, you know, how the brain works, right? So this is the thing I geek out on, right? So comparison, right? It's a typical habit of imposter syndrome. Now, the way comparison works in imposter syndrome is you compare yourself to someone else. They look brilliant, like they're having no problems at all. They're fantastic. They're succeeding. And we attribute talent to them, right? This is who we are and what we do. We're mixing that up again. And then we compare. And when we compare, we look for the differences, right? Now, your brain is designed to spot differences in your environment so it can spot dangers. Like if you're driving down a road through a field of cows and then suddenly there's a bright purple cow at the end, your brain is going to go, what's that, right? It zooms in on anything that's different because that's how it looks out for danger. So you can't just stop yourself comparing. But what you can do is when you notice that you're looking at these differences, flip it around and start to look for similarities. How am I the same as that person? What experiences do I have? That, you know, what values do we have in common? You know, what foods do we that we like mm-hmm. anything. The more you feel similar to that person, the more you'll feel better because you'll feel you're like them. You won't feel so isolated. And then the differences don't seem as important. So you'll feel more like you belong. And so that judgment, that self-judgment from the differences will go down. So that's a very good way to then view someone. And then you can say, okay, well, they have been learning for 10 years and I've been learning for 10 days. So, you know, maybe I'll cut myself some slack there. You know, you start to bring in the perspective because it's no longer making you feel bad about yourself. And then when you have that perspective, you can say, yeah, but that's really inspirational, right? So that's how you can flip from it making feel bad to it being really inspirational. And it's still comparing.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love that. Start looking for the similarities. I might be different to this person and this and that, and I'm similar in these other ways. And that's amazing. In terms of comparison, something that I've heard about, like when we're comparing ourselves with another language learner, I heard somebody say that if you want to compare to a person who's learning a language, don't do it with an adult who is speaking right now, who's fluent in that language. If you want to compare, maybe compare to a baby who's learning your target language. So you can take that as your measure stick. Okay, so I'm starting to learn Chinese now. Okay, let's compare. I will compare starting now with a baby who's starting to learn Chinese right now. I'm not going to compare it with a 20-year-old, with a 30-year-old, or a 40-year-old. That's not a fair comparison.
Yes. That is so true. And you know, before a baby starts to say even one word, they've been exposed to language and listening to language this whole time. I spent 6 months in Germany and I've been learning German through the years. But what I found was that when I was in Germany, then driving along, I was tuned into the German radio. And, you know, on the TV, there was German programs that I was watching. I walk down the street and I snippets of the German language, and that immersion really made a difference in my comprehension and my ability to recall words, because the patterns of the language get repeated over and over and over. And that's how the baby learns, through these repeated patterns. So I think you're absolutely right. That comparison to how our brains learn a language is brilliant.
I love what you say. And so we could take even some, the baby even has some advantage because he's been in the womb for several months and he got that time listening to the language.
When babies are learning to talk, the parents repeat things over and over and over, even it's mama, papa, right? The very first thing, right? It is over and over and over. So that's the repetition that helps build the structure. Whilst I'm a big fan of grammar for your traditional way of learning a language, there's also the biological way of learning a language through immersion and repetition that is powerful as well.
Yeah, there's both.
Yes.
And when we started this conversation, we talked about confidence and imposter syndrome. And I'm curious about, like, what are the difference between self-esteem when we're talking about a person with low self-esteem and imposter syndrome? Is that the same, or is there any connection? And what are the implications for us as learners?
Yeah, so if you have low self-esteem, then, you know, it's getting towards, you know, kind of a, like a psychological diagnosis. You might go and see a therapist to help with low self-esteem. Low self-esteem will show up in all areas of your life, right? So whether it's work, relationships, home life, learning language, it will show up everywhere. Imposter syndrome can show up in a very specific area. So for example, with the leaders that I work with, for example, very talented, very successful people, and they might be great in five different areas that they're dealing with every day, but there's one that maybe they aren't. And that's where their imposter syndrome is showing up. So imposter syndrome can be quite selective. So it could be that your imposter syndrome is showing up around learning a language, and you don't see it elsewhere in your life. You feel very confident and capable the rest of your life, but somebody asks you a question in that language and you have to reply, and suddenly you're feeling on the spot, and you know, so it may be showing up there. Who am I to think I can communicate with someone in another language? That's the internal imposter syndrome dialogue. So you can see the difference is very, very broad there.
And there's something in what you said that in that selectivity, in that it's selective. And I'm thinking of persons who speak several languages, and they might see this imposter syndrome playing out in one of them. Maybe there are a few languages that they feel comfortable and they are very confident. And then there are those who they feel like a fraud. This is not like who they really are, or that there's something missing.
Yeah, you can see it back to the root cause. It's where they've tied their worth and who they are with what they do, and specifically whether or not they do well in this language. Now, you know, as a language learning expert yourself, you'll know there are different kinds of languages. So, for example, you know, you might find Italian and Spanish and Portuguese really easy to learn, but German just foxes you. Well, they're very different basis in terms of the language. And so that's one reason you might be finding German harder to learn. It's not because suddenly you've stopped being a good learner or something like that. But again, if you notice it, it's going to be, you'll be making some meaning about it. What does not being as far along as you want to be mean about you? What are you making it mean about you? And when we change what it means about us, then we can relax. And for language learning, I particularly speaking language, because as understanding is easier than speaking it. But speaking a language, we really have to be free to make mistakes, to muddle our way through, to put words in the wrong order, to use the wrong tense, to especially if you know quite a few languages, you start speaking in another language when it's, you know. Or can't find the word. I have this with German and Spanish, actually. I'm talking in German and I can't find a word, but I know it in Spanish. They creep in. So there's a degree of relaxedness that really helps your learning language. And if you're perfectionist and rigid about it, and if you're worried about making mistakes, then that's going to impact you. It's going to make you tense. That's going to trigger you. And what's really interesting is, so imposter syndrome can trigger the nervous system, and being put on the spot learning a language can trigger your nervous system. And what I mean by that is that when your brain detects what it considers to be a threat, it goes into this excited nervous system state, agitated nervous system state. It causes you to fight. So it's fight, flight, which is running away, and freeze, where you just stop and your brain goes blank and you can't think of anything. So these are states of the nervous system that are designed in your biology, evolutionary biology, designed to try and protect you from a threat. So, you know, if, you know, there's a tiger in the room, you know, you might want to fight it, to, you know, throw things at it and hit it with a stick to make it go away. Or you might run away yourself, or you might freeze and hope that it doesn't notice you because maybe it thinks you're dead. Yeah. So that's what happens when we get too stressed. And that's your body performing normally. Now, they've done studies of what happens to the brain when you're in that state. And Your blood flow goes to your arms and legs to fight or run away. It gets taken from your prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking and strategic planning part of the brain, the logical part of your brain. You literally don't have as much blood flow. You literally don't have the oxygen and the nutrients to work as well. So your intelligence, your IQ, goes down by 13 points. Your creativity goes down by 50 points. You get reactive. You get emotionally active. You get stressed. So that's not the state at which you're comfortable experimenting, at which you don't mind making mistakes. This is a tense where the brain's saying, if you say a wrong word to that French person, then that French person is going to hate you forever or chase after you with a stick. So that's what your brain's telling you. It perceives it as a threat. So if you notice yourself being triggered like this, then calm down as much as you can, right? And don't worry, it's your body doing just what it's supposed to do. It's just not appropriate to do it when you're trying to speak a new language. Yeah, so the more you calm you can get, the more relaxed you are about making mistakes, the easier it's going to be. And of course, the faster you're going to learn. And as I'm sure that you say to everybody who's learning a language, when you try to speak somebody else's language, vast majority of people really appreciate the effort that you're making.
Yeah, as the saying goes, that it goes to their heart. I don't know whose face is that. I think that there's a famous quote about that. Like, when you're speaking in this language, it goes to their mind. I don't know if it's like this, but when they speak in their native language or their language, it goes directly to their heart.
You know, that is so interesting. So I work with people all around the world. Our sessions we work with are in English. And if we're talking about emotional things, what I've noticed that people whose first language isn't English will talk about emotional things, but they feel quite detached, right? So they're not really feeling it. So what I do is I ask them to express it in their own language. And it's our emotions are attached to our own language, because we can translate a word like shame, Schade in German, right? I know that's intellectually, that's the word in German, but the English version for me, because English is my first language, has that emotion to it. And so I think that's exactly what you're saying. So certainly, people will express their emotions in their own language far more easily than they do in a second language.
And that's a good transition to my next question. And that's, how does our cultural or educational background shape the way that imposter syndrome shows up in our learning process?
What's most interesting about this is that they've done studies all over the world, and the way that it shows up is exactly the same. There's three types of symptoms. There's the thoughts, which is feeling ashamed, self-critical, feeling like you just got lucky, that you don't belong here, or you don't deserve to be here, or you don't belong. So those are the thoughts. And then there's the stress of it, the fight, flight, and freeze that I was talking about, that can lead to anxiety and overwhelm. And there's a whole bunch of compensating behaviors, stress behaviors that we do, like comparing, like perfectionism. But it can include procrastination, avoiding opportunities, not speaking up enough, thinking that if you get one more qualification, that'll solve everything, and it doesn't. Just pushing through, over-preparing, all these different kind of symptoms. And regardless of, you know, your culture growing up, you're going to be experiencing that cycle. That unique profile will be unique to you, but there's no real correlation to culture, and there's no correlation to personality, because they searched all personality tests. You know, maybe there's a personality profile of imposter syndrome. Well, there isn't, because it's not about your personality.
You mentioned something before about this relationship and between our actions and how we see ourselves, our identity. And that made me think of the importance of making mistakes to learn. And sometimes when we fail, we feel like a failure.
Yes.
And I wonder what other ways of using identity or identifying ourselves, taking an identity that are more conducive and more helpful to our learning process.
So that's the fundamental, and this is actually how I eliminate imposter syndrome for people, taking them through learning how to separate their worth as a person from their actions. And it's a very simple concept, but we are surrounded in all societies across the globe by this belief. Right? It's like a mass hallucination, if you like, right? That our worth as our person depends on what we do. So the more you can focus on separating that out for yourself, just in your thinking, then that will dial down the imposter syndrome thoughts and the behaviors. So that's a real way through. And that applies to languages, right? Learning languages. The more you're free to just play, experiment, try things out, ready to get things wrong. So these are different actions, right? But the more you're relaxed you are, the less you're making it mean anything about you. Okay? I've been stuck on these verb conjugations, and I just, you know, for the last 3 weeks. And then the imposter syndrome part, well, how stupid am I? Who am I to think that I to think I can master this? And the playful bit is, well, I wonder if there's a song I can sing to help me learn it, because song's a very powerful way to learn and integrate languages. By the way, just like kids do, they're always singing language songs. Yeah. So the more that you're able to separate out your actions from your worth, then the easier it's going to be to relax and in that integrate. Because if you're tense, as I said, when you're triggered, your brain's not learning. If you're stressed, your brain isn't learning. When you're relaxed, that's when your brain can learn.
If you're tense, you're not going to learn that verb tense. In other words, yeah. That's very helpful. So thank you for that. That makes me think also that sometimes the learners, some of the identities we take a lot of pride in that. Like every time or many times where I hear people calling themselves perfectionists, it has some like overtone, something that it's something that they feel proud about. Is that something, is yes. just me, or is that something going on around that? What's been your experience?
It's very, very common, right? People who are perfectionists believe that that's what makes them good, right? Now, the thing is, perfectionism is a symptom of imposter syndrome. And perfectionism isn't the same as having high standards, right? Perfectionism is the need to be perfect. Right? High standards is just high standards. But if you need to be everything to be perfect, then you're stressed about things being perfect. So, and then, but you think because you're reaching for high standards with your perfectionism, that the perfectionism makes you successful and you'd be proud of it because obviously I do quality work. You're completely ignoring the fact that people can have high standards and be relaxed about it. And have high standards and be open to learning and flexible and not stressed. So the only thing perfectionism means is that you're stressed about having a high standard.
There's something I've heard in people saying when the way that they talk about their perfectionistic tendencies is that I had this impression that people, when they say, if I stop being like this, I'm going to lose my drive. Or I'm going to lose my intensity, or like I'm going to stop having goals. I won't have any goals at all. Like it's perfectionism or nothing. And it's hard to convey that idea of high standards or excellence, striving for excellence versus being a perfectionist.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why it's so sad. I find imposter syndrome really sad because it's not anything wrong with the person, but it's a perspective it's a painful perspective that they really don't need. They absolutely don't need it. So what I find when I'm working with clients and we get rid of, because we do, we eliminate imposter syndrome. It goes away. And I find they don't lose their drive. They don't lose their ambition. In fact, it changes. It actually ramps them up. So when you're a perfectionist, right? Yes, you're doing high quality work, but you're terrified of making a mistake. And what that means is that the distraction of it will slow you down. It will allow, you know, you're actually more likely to make a mistake, so you have to work even harder. So it is going to be exhausting to do. But also, the more you try, you think that that causes your success. And so you can't let it go. So you think that the drive to be perfect is caused your success. When you let go of the perfectionism, that need, you're relaxed about it. You become open to making mistakes, but open to new opportunities. And suddenly things that you would have said as a perfectionist with imposter syndrome, oh, I don't think I could do that. You can absolutely do. So I have people who come to me who are, you know, in a very senior role, but overwhelmed with what they're doing and so stressed. They finish the program and they're far more relaxed, but they don't want to sit around and on a beach, right? It doesn't make you lazy. It instead makes you go, well, I wonder what would happen if I did this, right? They become explorers, adventurers, experimenters, and they actually have ambition further than they thought they could ever do, because if they didn't get there, it wouldn't be so devastating to them, right? Because they're free to reach for it and they don't have to worry about what it means about them if they don't get it. Because it doesn't mean anything. It actually, perfectionism holds you back far more than you can imagine.
That's so fascinating. It sounds like they are relaxing to action instead of coming from this place of, there are different ways of taking action. Can be from a place of anxiety and stress and agitation or relaxation, and being totally at ease with that.
Yeah. So. I think the word there, and it's great you use the word relaxation, because I think that's where this idea comes from, that if I relax about things, then I'm not going to get things done. Because people's idea of relaxation is sitting on a hammock in a beach. No, that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is accepting ourselves as worthy, accepting ourselves whatever we do. And that gives you the freedom then. And because you've got all of this stress fallen away, you are physically more relaxed, right? You're more calm, but you also sleep better. You're more focused. You can be more productive. And the world starts getting quite exciting. Right, well, I can go off and do this. And, you know, here's an opportunity that maybe I would not have taken before, because maybe if I got it wrong, how terrible would things be? Here's an opportunity. I wonder what would happen. I can take that. So people are energized with this freedom. And that's been my experience. They're energized. Their ambition is expanded. They see more possibilities for themselves. And they have a lot more fun as well.
And that's so great. My last question is about eliminating imposter syndrome. So we talked about separating the identity from the actions, like what we're making it mean when we make mistake. And what else would be helpful for language learner and skill builder who is looking to eliminate this at the root?
Yeah, well, to eliminate it at the root, because this belief that our worth depends on what we do, that our worth is conditional, it's unconscious, right? So what it is, and the way it's showing up, is there's a part of your brain, the fear center in your brain, the amygdala, is always scanning around looking out for danger. And so it's identified the challenges to your identity, the challenges to your worth, as a threat. To eliminate the root cause of imposter syndrome, there's a very specific process that we go through to change the way that the amygdala in the brain perceives the world around you. It's a very systematic step-by-step process with very intricate neuroscience basis. So it's not something, it's not a mindset thing. It's not a reframing that, you know, how you look at things. So to eliminate imposter syndrome takes this work, right? And that's the work that I do. To dial it down, there's several things you can do. The very first thing I would suggest you do is to get calm. Start noticing when you're tense. Do you go into fight or flight or freeze? Yeah, start noticing when you're tense and get calm as fast as you can, because that will put you back into the learning state rather than the stress state. You're trying to learn things when you're stressed. I mean, really, don't bother. Go and have a cup of tea or go for a walk, because it's not going to go in. I think that's probably the most powerful thing you can do to set you on this path to feel more like you belong, more like you're not an imposter.
Wonderful. Can you tell us more about what does your process look like to eliminate imposter syndrome at the root cause? Or when?
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about that? Which spaces do you develop that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's really interesting. So my work is one-to-one. The process, as I mentioned, starts with getting calm. So it's a three-step process. First, we get calm. Then we clear the belief in the amygdala. So that's this is a step-by-step thing that we do. It's very personal. Yeah, so although the process is very very systematic, how you do it is it's based on your experiences. So you bring your experiences to it and then put it through this systematic process. And then that changes the way the brain perceives. It sees it as no longer a threat. So that's the clearing. And then we create success and create the new belief about your worth being conditional. And so that's a three-step process that I take people through. It's a 90-day process, and you can find it on my website. It's completesuccess.co.uk. I've also written the whole of the process with all of the neuroscience in it in my book, Outsmart Imposter Syndrome. And you can get that wherever books are sold.
Wonderful. Thank you. And is there anything else you'd like to share with my audience that I haven't asked you today?
Yeah, just one thing. If you think you have imposter syndrome, but you're not sure, the very first thing to do is to check. And there is a quiz. You can put the link in the show notes. Check out the quiz. You know, if you're fed up of overworking, over judging yourself, beating yourself up, fed up of your perfectionism, whatever is exhausting you, take the quiz. And if you get over 50%, that's imposter syndrome. If you get over 62%, then imposter syndrome is having a significant effect on your life. And so it's worth looking for solutions, looking for other ways. There's my way, and there's, you know, other ways that people can. There are coaches that work with just dialing down the symptoms. So you don't have to jump into a 90-day one-to-one program to get rid of it. But there are other things that you can do.
Thank you. So there's your website. Are you present on social or other places where people can get in contact with you?
Yeah. So because my clients are, you know, corporate clients, executives and leaders, because they're very concerned about getting rid of imposter syndrome. I'm mostly on LinkedIn. So my profile on LinkedIn is Tara-Halliday-PhD. And I'm posting there several times a week. You can, you know, connect with me. You can send me a message, ask me questions, anything you like.
Excellent. It's been wonderful having you today, Tara. And I learned a lot on imposter syndrome. I think that's such an important topic, and it's so present in our lives and our everyday lives as a language learner, as skill builders. And that's something that I also see as a coach on a daily basis, very, very clearly. So thank you so much for being here, for sharing your wisdom and experience with us.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Puedes escuchar Poder Aprender en las principales plataformas de podcast y en YouTube. También te invito a suscribirte al newsletter semanal en poderaprender.com para enterarte de los nuevos episodios del podcast y otras novedades para aprender mejor. En redes sociales puedes buscar este podcast como Poder Aprender. Encontrá todos los links en la descripción. Y si te gusta mucho, si te sirve el contenido del podcast, te invito a dejar una reseña y una calificación de 5 estrellas en Spotify o Apple Podcasts para que estos episodios lleguen a más personas y que más gente pueda aprender mejor. Eso es todo por ahora. Nos vemos en un próximo episodio. Sigan aprendiendo y acuérdense de practicar bien.